DiscerningHearts.com, in cooperation with the Oblates of the Virgin Mary, presents Spiritual Desolation. Be aware, understand, take action with Father Timothy Gallagher. Father Gallagher is a member of the Oblates of the Virgin Mary, a religious community dedicated to retreats and spiritual formation according to the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius of Loyola. He is featured on several series found on the Eternal Word television network. He is also author of numerous books on the spiritual teachings of St. Ignatius of Loyola and the Venerable Bruno Lanteri, founder of the Oblates of the Virgin Mary, all published by the Crossroads Publishing Company. This particular series is based in part on Chapter 4 of Setting Captives Free, Personal Reflections on Ignatian Discernment of Spirits. Spiritual Desolation. Be aware, understand, take action with Father Timothy Gallagher. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Could I bring up an example, Father Gallagher, or two that might be apropos for some people who are listening that are kind of struggling with what they feel as this dryness? For example, someone who maybe had the experience of being able to attend daily Mass, and because of circumstances, maybe they had to get a job, maybe a child was born or whatever that might be, they're no longer able to attend daily Mass. And so they feel maybe this dryness, and yet they feel that the other forms of prayer may not be as effective as the daily Mass. They may not even try. The fact is that these are the circumstances in which they find their life. What might be the remedy in this particular case?
Well, I think that's a different situation in a blessed way from what we've just been describing, because there's no negligence in the person's life there. There's no introduction of something that is contrary to what Christ would want that is leading to the difficulty in prayer. It's actually something very beautiful, you know, the birth of a child, for example, that leads this person more deeply into his or her vocation, or, you know, a job that is necessary for the sake of the family and so forth that make it difficult. So I think the first thing to say to anyone in that situation is, do not feel at all that you are failing the Lord. On the contrary, by doing what you need to do for the sake of your work, for the sake of the new child, or for whatever the reasons of health that have come up to take proper care of an illness or some situation, we are entering actually more deeply into the vocation the Lord has called us, as we do these things out of love for the Lord and in the Lord for those with whom we share our lives. Having said that, then the need is to find the way to pray in the new situation. An excellent resource for this would be St. Francis de Sales' Introduction to the Devout Life, because he addresses exactly this issue, although he is speaking of a broader issue of, yes, monks in their monasteries can pray regularly and be dedicated to the things of God. And then the sense would be that others who have to live more actively in the world can never hope for the same kind of closeness with the Lord or prayer or holiness. And so he very warmly says on the contrary. And the whole emphasis in his book is, how does one live the devout life, the life of holiness in the world, in the active life in the world, in the lay vocation, in marriage, and so forth. So the need is simply to pray in the way that is possible in the new situation. And it might be the rosary, it might be the liturgy of the hours or a part of it. It might be possible to get a few minutes of quiet time. I think I've quoted to you before a mother telling me once that several young children, the only place of quiet she could get was to go in the bathroom and lock the door. And that was where she would pray in the way that she was able for the time that she could have. I remember reading in the life of St. Marie of the Incarnation, when she was still in France at home, watching her mother in the home working and seeing that her mother's lips were moving silently as she worked in the home. So creatively, we can find, I think, it is always possible to pray. The only need is to shape the way we pray to the circumstances into which God has called us at a given time, and know that a time is very likely to come when it will be possible to return to daily Mass as the children grow and so forth, as situations change in our lives. So that's all God asks of us, is to pray in the real circumstances of our lives.
And that might be something that could be considered maybe a lack of formation in prayer. Maybe they're not aware of the other forms of prayer, that there are other ways to open a door to that continued relationship. We just have to seek those out, would you say?
I would. And that's just part of the spiritual formation, which is a part of living the ongoing Christian life, so that we're always learning. And I would actually say that if life maybe is more busy now than it would have been a few generations ago, we also have means that were never available before to find that spiritual formation. And I'm thinking of what we're doing right now, you know, digital means through computers and phones and tablets. We can have it in our car. We can have it while our hands are busy and our minds are free. So that the avenues for spiritual formation are abundant and easily available. To say nothing, of course, of, let's say, something that's offered in our parish or retreats, programs of formation in a diocese. There are all sorts of things out there as well. So all we need to do is dive into that world. And as we do that, the possibilities expand. And we'll find the way that we can pray that fits best in our real circumstances.
And that negligence in prayer and how that looks, is it possible that sometimes that we almost attempt to do too much, or we set ourselves up for the possibility of that maybe we become discouraged because we have not allowed ourselves the time that we've wanted to dedicate to that prayer, and so that we become discouraged and then we kind of fall off in a sense.
Yes, I'd say that's yet another situation. Again, I would hesitate to call that negligence, because probably what's behind that is goodwill and a desire to do as much as one can, you know, to pray as richly and faithfully. So that we'll go back to the mother with young children. Well, if I get up an hour earlier, I'll have an hour of prayer. And then tiredness comes in, you know, after a while. I think the Lord loves that kind of desire. But it's important not to let the realization that I can't pray in this way, in these circumstances, lead to discouragement. All that's necessary is to find the way that is possible in the circumstances. And I would say that is possible regularly, not heroically, in the sense that I can get up an hour earlier if everything goes the way I hope it will the evening before, so that I can get to rest on time and nothing unusual or unforeseen comes into the week. And in terms of various health issues, everything is at its maximum, going well, and so on, because life isn't like that. So I think it's important to choose what is realistically possible in the messiness of real life. And my suggestion would be, if we're not sure, so to be maybe a little too concrete, well, should I get up an hour earlier, a half hour, 20 minutes? My suggestion would be, start with less rather than more. And then you'll find out if you can do more. And it's a lot better, I think, to start with less and sense with a certain uplift of heart that I actually can do more and sustain it, than it is to start with the maximum and then find out that I can't do it, and with tiredness and a little regret, you know, diminish what I'm doing. So I would say, start with what we know is realistically possible, and then we'll see where the Lord will lead. But, you know, these questions that you're raising now, they're good questions. They're questions about people who are generous, who really want lives of prayer and just need to find their way within it. And that's a healthy thing. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I've experienced this in the life of a dear friend. God bless her. She is now gone to the Father. She died. She was in her 90s and literally bedridden in a nursing home. And this is a woman who faithfully went to Mass every day, prayed the rosary, was involved in scripture study. But in these later years, the ability for her to be able to do that diminished significantly. And it was a source of discouragement for her when she felt, all I can do is maybe watch the rosary on television now. She would watch, for example, the Rosary on EWTN, or and she would almost beat herself up, like, this is not what I used to do. It's not good enough. I'm not sure. Instead of allowing herself to, this is where I'm at. This is the best I can do, and to be open to receive whatever the graces are that God is meeting her in that, in her experience at that time. I think she would eventually become more accepting when she stopped accusing herself of and being frustrated. That could be a part of that block, can it? I mean, that can be that, that discouragement can be a very real thing for some.
Well, I would pull two elements out of an experience like that. And one is just a very natural human struggle or regret at the loss of a certain energy, which allowed us to do certain things, whether spiritual like this or just physical. And I think we need to reverence that. That is not easy for any of us when there's a diminishment physically that no longer allows us to do things that we've loved and have been fruitful for us. The other element is the specifically spiritual piece. And there, yes, there is a journey of acceptance of the Father's will, that the Father is inviting us to pray now in the way that is possible. I think it's beautiful that you watch the Rosary on television. It's a beautiful way to accommodate to her new physical circumstances, to accommodate her prayer to that. And so to find those ways, I'm thinking too of a woman I know in her late 80s now, prayed all her life, has very, very little energy now, very frail, but has a very beautiful spiritual life. In some sense, she's always with the Lord. Prayer is ongoing, even though she doesn't have the energy for the more active forms of prayer. So the need there is a certain surrender and to pray in the real circumstances. And all of this says to avoid any sense, but as I say, we'll reverence the human struggle. Something has been lost that was beautiful, in a certain energy. But spiritually, to know that the Lord is not asking any more than what is possible for us in these circumstances. And so to close the door with God's grace as best we're able to that kind of discouragement, which is not something that the Lord would want, and which gives a vulnerability for the spiritual desolation that we're speaking about. But I think what a person needs in that circumstance is really to be reassured that you're doing exactly what the Lord wants now as far as your prayer goes, by praying in the way that you are able now. That's all the Lord is asking. Let your heart be at peace about that.
Would one be consoled in some ways that if they're aware in their heart, the movement is towards a desire to enter into that relationship in whatever fashion they're able to in that time, into prayer, towards God, as opposed to maybe that awareness that I'd rather do other things that lead me away from that encounter in prayer. There, you know, I want to do other things as opposed to being able to dedicate a certain aspect of my life, you know, continually in that prayer. Am I making that more complicated in what I'm trying to describe here?
Well, yes, I think those are two different things. One would be simply a turning away from prayer, and the other is an inability now to pray, just for physical reasons, to pray in the way that the person was accustomed to before, but with a consistent longing of the heart for the Lord and a desire and in fact praying in the ways that are possible. Like that beautiful example of watching the Rosary on television. Yes, those are very different things. And the second thing that we've described is beautiful. It's all the Lord is asking. It would be interesting to read Thérèse in her last months when she had the illness, that book, Her Last Conversations, where day by day her sister chronicled the things that her sister said. And Thérèse says this along the way, that she's no longer able to pray the divine office with the other nuns. She's in the infirmary, too ill to do anything, even to go to Mass at this point. And all she does is, what are you saying to the Lord? Nothing. I'm just loving him. You know, it's just, she's praying in the way that she's able to, offering her, her daily suffering also to the Lord, in union with the Lord. So that those are going to be the ways that we're going to be able to pray in such circumstances. And they are beautiful. To go back to the woman that I just mentioned in her late 80s, she is someone who prays for the various events that I do. I send an email, and I am convinced that her prayer is among the most powerful prayer support that is there for me in these various events, because it comes out of life and suffering freely offered to the Lord. I think this woman's contemplative presence, because that's what she's leading now, there's no activity anymore in her life, but it's just living in the presence of God, just being in communion with the Lord and offering physical suffering. I think that is a powerful source of grace for the church. So because we're on this, it's probably important to say that prayer, I think, at that stage becomes not just formal prayer, but it becomes our life and our suffering. In a certain sense, it's a sharing of what Jesus experiences on the cross in our own bodies, in our own humanity, that united with him, as Paul says, makes up for what is lacking in the sufferings of Christ for the sake of the body of the church. So it's very important, too, I think, that we know that the contribution that we make, or the fruitfulness of our prayer now, is from suffering linked with prayer in the way that we're able to do that. I'm also thinking of, this was one of our priests in my religious community, the Oblates of the Virgin Mary, who just died last April. He was in his late 50s. And about 7 years ago or so, he was working in the Philippines. At the time, he contracted an illness and was brought back to this country and diagnosed with MSA, a multiple systems atrophy, in which one after another, the different systems of the body gradually shut down. And normally life expectancy is about 6 years from onset. And so he went through all of that, and we watched him. He spent the last 3 years of his life in the hospital, in his bed, increasingly unable to move and finally unable to speak. But it was just a powerful thing to watch this. He would say Mass every day in his hospital bed with an iPad that he was able to touch and move the prayers of the Mass. There were visitors constantly. When he celebrated his Mass, there were always people there with him. And after the Mass, he would leave the Blessed Sacrament for an hour exposed on his little hospital tray, and he and the others there in silence would have an hour of prayer. He too was somebody who prayed for different events, and his prayer was powerful. You know, I used to read about saints in such circumstances, and the writers would say they never complained, and I never really fully believed it. You know, how can you go through these things? But I saw it. You know, never complained, willingly smiled, willingly laughed. Just people loved being with him. There was a lightness and a brightness about him. Well, that kind of life, lived with faith, accepted with love, and with such prayer as those circumstances allow, is probably the richest spiritual fruitfulness of the person's whole life. I say probably because many different things can happen in different lives, but certainly at this point, a person's presence in the world and the church is indescribably precious and fruitful.
See, that's one of those things I don't think we appreciate, Father Gallagher, that uniting, that's prayer. It's like almost a 24/7 constantly in, as St. Paul said, that's somebody who's moved into, I am so united, I'm praying all the time. And you're praying not just with the words that come out of your mouth, but your whole being, everything that's affecting you in this moment, you're uniting. And that's prayer, isn't it?
It is prayer, and it's transforming the person, and it's fruitful for the church. Well, let's just go back to this sentence from St. John of the Cross that we quoted earlier, but now in the context of a person living this situation. The smallest movement of pure love is more useful to the church than all other works put together. Let's just say that again. The smallest movement of pure love, when we offer to the Lord the suffering, the struggle, the inabilities, pray in the way that we can, try to be patient, smile at those who are assisting us. And all that we're doing, these are small things, but the smallest movement of pure love, when that's done out of union with the Lord, a desire to love in the way that the Lord is asking me to love, that's more useful to the church than all other works. Think of the great missionaries, the building cathedrals, teaching in universities, hospital work, ministry in parishes. The smallest movement of pure love is more useful to the church than all other works put together. And that's where Therese delighted in discovering her vocation as, in the heart of the church, I will be love. And what's remarkable about that is that all of us can do this. We all have small daily opportunities, many, many of them, in which we can try to love in the way the Lord would want us to love. And that's more useful to the church than all other works put together. If we are really just in these small daily things, that's again Therese, nothing dramatic, just smiling at the sister who splashes her with the water and so on, the different things. We can all do that. You know, sometimes I think of what when Thomas Merton first went to the monastery in Gethsemane in Kentucky. He said to himself, now I see what holds the world together, this silent, hidden life of penance and prayer. And people who are in this circumstance of some physical limitation, but live it in this way, like the people we've been describing, that's what holds the whole church and the world together. It's that holy presence. One time a priest came into the monastery, the Carmelite monastery, for whatever reason, maybe to assist one of the sisters who was ill. And he was bringing communion to one of the sisters, and Therese accompanied him, leading the way with a lit candle. He said afterwards, just seeing her, she was like that lit candle. And there was a holiness, a closeness with the Lord, a goodness. We can be that kind of lit candle in our homes, in our parishes, in our marriages, in our hospitals. And that's what blesses everyone. In our surroundings and throughout the church and the world. That's what our hope is.
And so to connect that once again to desolation, for someone who, the enemy in that suffering, would want you to despair, to detract, to say this isn't what you used to be. You are not the person that you were. You are failing. Yeah, or instill fear about the future, or a host of other, just a raft of other things. The circumstances, to be aware of the circumstances of your life and to look at them through God's eyes and not to listen, and whatever that might be, you know, to the voice of the enemy.
Absolutely. The enemy will willingly work in any vulnerability that we have. So that if there is a physical vulnerability because there's pain and limitation, so there can just be naturally a discouragement there, very willingly the enemy will move into that and bring the spiritual desolation. You're failing the Lord. You're not really a person of prayer of any value. You're regressing in the spiritual life. God is disappointed with you. And all of that heaviness and all of that, as we've said before, like everything else about spiritual desolation, is a lie. None of that is true. And that's where, well, setting captives free, that's where this teaching of St. Ignatius can be so helpful. So that if a person could be exposed to this teaching as the person goes through a situation like this, it's very helpful. Or if we're visiting a person like this and we know this teaching, if we can share this with a person, it does a great deal to lift the burden and to instill hope and to see the truth of the situation, which offers a very, very rich opportunity to love and to serve, you know, the Lord.
And I think just one more footnote on this, we've been speaking of those who might be suffering from an illness or have had circumstances change in their lives. So it's affected what they had perceived as their normal prayer pattern or the way that they found consolation in prayer. But there are also those who will be listening to you, Father Gallagher, who have responded in such a way to this call that they've been called to serve. whether they've been called to an awareness that they have a vocation. And so they're a seminarian that's praying in the seminary, or it's a young mother who has started a prayer group, or somebody who has even gone to work in a parish. And they think because they're doing the Lord's work that they would receive more consolation. They're saying yes to the call. And yet now something's come upon them and they're hitting this time of dryness. And it's baffling because I thought because I'm doing the Lord's work that it would actually grow and it would get better. That area can be a quagmire for many, can it?
So I would refer anyone who resonates with what you just said to our earlier series where we went through the rules systematically, because that's where Ignatius helps a person in that situation. This is a person who's dedicated, taking new steps, serving the Lord with energy, and at a certain point finds that the energy has waned and there's a heaviness and a discouragement now that comes into this, and it gets hard to persevere at such times. There's no shame in experiencing that, as we've said many times. It's normal spiritual experience, and there is a way through it. And it's very important that we know the way through it, because if we go through it with the wisdom Ignatius supplies and the tools that he supplies, not only will those times not harm us, so that we won't be giving up the new steps and so on, but we're actually going to grow in beautiful ways as we learn how to understand that situation of spiritual desolation, and we learn what to do in that circumstance, and we put it into practice, then beautiful growth comes into our lives. Because growth in the spiritual life comes both from the joy of spiritual consolation. It's probably that kind of energy which led the person to take these steps. But it also comes from undergoing spiritual desolation and faithfully going through it with the wisdom our tradition supplies, and Ignatius is the prime exponent of it. So if what you've just said resonates in the hearts of anyone listening, then I would warmly invite the person to go back to the series that we did on the discernment of spirits, of course, the corresponding book and so on. And there they will find a very valuable teaching from Ignatius on understanding the situation and knowing how to move forward without harm and actually with progress.
Join us for our next episode, where we'll continue our conversation about other aspects of dryness in prayer in relationship to spiritual desolation. You've been listening to Spiritual Desolation. Be aware, understand, take action with Father Timothy Gallagher. This particular series is based in part on Chapter 4 of Setting Captives Free, Personal Reflections on Ignatian Discernment of Spirits. You can find this book on Father Gallagher's website at fathertimothygallagher.org. To hear and or to download this episode, along with hundreds of other spiritual formation programs, visit discerninghearts.com. This has been a production of Discerning Hearts in cooperation with the Oblates of the Virgin Mary. We hope that if this has been helpful for you, that you will first pray for our mission. And if you feel us worthy, consider a charitable donation, which is fully tax deductible, to help support our efforts. But most of all, we hope that you will tell a friend about discerninghearts.com and join us next time for Spiritual Desolation. Be aware, understand, and take action with Father Timothy Gallagher.